Welcome to Real Wealth Podcast, sponsored by Leading Edge Financial Planning. I'm Mike Proctor. I'm the host today, and I've got some very, very special guests. Some people say really, really special. I think they're an appropriate level of special, but it's Lyndon, Jacob, and James here on the team. They're all advisors here at Leading Edge Financial Planning. Jacob is piping in from Overland Park, James from somewhere down in Florida. Likely near Disney World, or it's Disney World, right? Not Disneyland.
Yeah.
I always confuse those two. I always confuse them. Obviously I haven't been to them because then I wouldn't confuse them. Right. And then Lyndon right here in Wichita.
That's right.
What's really important for us is to help clients make wise financial decisions, help them align their values in life with what they're doing with their finances, and also explore how to live the best life possible. So that's what we're going to do today, except what all these guys have in common, what we all have in common is an affinity for Dave Ramsey. Now, Lyndon here, he truly worked the Ramsey program, and it was a really great thing for him. He's got a special story about that. Maybe he'll share that today. Lyndon also is a Dave Ramsey master certified coach. Did I get that right?
Master Solutions Financial Coach.
Mm-hmm. And then Jacob is a SmartVestor Pro. And then James works with Jacob on that. And they kind of team up on that specifically. And so, we've got actually a majority of our advisors have a direct connection to the Dave Ramsey programs. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to connect that to financial planning, living the best life possible, and some of the freedom that can help open up and gain some insight on how Dave Ramsey crosses over with planning and sets people up for success. So welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So I am curious. I think maybe that's a perfect starting point. Lyndon, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about your story of how you got connected with Dave Ramsey, maybe what it helped you accomplish, what it helped you realize, and how it helped you today.
All right. Sure. Yeah. I started out at doing some financial coaching at the church that I attend. And I thought there must be some extra help out there in terms of helping me help others. And so I signed up for a course through Ramsey Solutions, become a master financial coach. And I actually went out to Tennessee to the location where Ramsey is and spent 3 days there going through a program that was actually 6 months long, but 3 days we were on site and learned how to guide people to have a better life, a better marriage, through learning to handle their money in a better way, which included starting with budgeting and saving an emergency fund and paying off debt. A lot of times, three of the biggest things that are holding people back.
Absolutely. But that wasn't your starting point with Dave Ramsey, in all fairness, right?
That's true. Before that, I was leading Financial Peace University classes. And that's Dave Ramsey's their way of taking people through the steps toward financial freedom, financial peace, and it's often done through churches. And so I led those through the church that I attend.
Right, but what was before that?
Oh, before that. Okay. Wow, you're going way back.
Why not?
Well, really, I guess maybe it started soon after college, where I learned to live a debt-free life. We had a home loan, which is debt, but other than that, we didn't have any debt, and we learned to also save and invest. And really, it led me toward an interest in helping other people do the same thing. And eventually, it started with Crown Financial Ministries, which was very popular back in the early 2000s. And then after that, the Dave Ramsey organization came along, and people found that a little bit more entertaining and easy to go through. I think is probably the main reason it kind of overtook what Crown Financial Ministries was doing. But it's very similar in what they teach, living a debt-free life and being generous with your money and learning to save and invest for the future.
Absolutely. And so from a big, I guess, a longitudinal study of your own life,
right?
How'd that work out for you? How do you feel today after going through that?
Well, for the past 6 years, I've not had any debt. And my wife's been able to retire because of that. And I was able, maybe a bigger thing than her retiring, at least to me, is I was able to quit a good paying job and switch careers and basically start over as a financial planner starting about 5 years ago. And I would have never been able to do that if we'd have been loaded down with debt and not had enough saved for retirement. So I'd like to help other people do the same thing because it's pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, and it's such an awesome story to, there's another podcast where you go into detail and in telling your story. And I think we recorded that almost a year ago.
Yeah. I think so.
And Julie mentioned to us just a few weeks ago how great she thought it was once she listened to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it really is I mean, it's such a great story of how, you know, we think about like in marriage and family, like it's so helpful to turn towards one another and put the other one or put your spouse first. And I think there was just a mega shift within you on how you were perceiving the abundance of what you guys had to work with and the freedom that gave you. But all that started back a long time ago when you started working towards being debt-free, saving up that money, mm-hmm. and really harnessing what blessings you guys had at hand.
Right.
So it's such a cool story. I'd encourage anyone to go back and listen to it. So we can know what we're laughing about that it took that long for his own wife to go listen to it.
Yeah. She was surprised. She said, hey, that was really good.
I know, right? You know, and I've got this sign that my grandma gave me. It says, but behind every man is a surprised woman.
Yeah. Every successful man.
Every successful man is a surprised woman. Yeah. So anyways, yeah. Jacob, what got you into working with SmartVestor Pro?
Yeah, so I got introduced to Dave about 2005 and with someone at church. And then about 2008 or 9, started helping with classes and teaching financial peace classes. And then in 2020, I was able to make a transition over and be able to join the SmartVestor program with Dave.
What has been the best part for you in working with the Dave Ramsey program, methodology, and SmartVestor program?
Really, the best thing is just, you know, other people that are really trying to strive along the same way and being able to help them kind of reach their goals and objectives and realizing that, you know, there are others out there that, you know, we're all trying to go for the same thing and we agree with the same values that we're trying to all work towards.
Right. Yeah. So being equally yoked is just such a big part of forming a partnership and building a long-term relationship. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background though? Because you got in this industry, 5-7 years ago, something like that is when you actually got into the advising side. And before that you've got some other accounting,
So I have dealings as well. 25 years of accounting background and data research, and then moved into the advising world in 2015. And then that's as I was continuing to do financial peace classes and wanted to be able to better connect advising and investing along with what I was doing within the financial peace classes. So that's when I joined them in 2020.
Yeah. And then you got, let's see. So David Thorne introduced us because of our common affinity and connections to politics, I think was had a lot to do with that. But yeah, so we had a mutual friend, David, who he did another podcast that's, again, great to go listen to and hear more about their workings and also his startup. And then also he built the app for our company, for our constituents. So yeah, lots of fun. It's kind of fun, all the connections that happen. Such a small world, and great to be equally yoked with people. Yeah. Cool. And so, yeah, it's been so awesome to have you on board here and get you launched and get you going. And then, James, what's been your experience with Dave Ramsey up to this point and the different programs on becoming debt-free, going through the baby steps and, yeah, and beginning to help others work on that yourself?
Yeah. So I don't know if I've ever told you this story, Mike, but, my parents did, financial peace through our church. So I guess this was after your time, Lyndon, but post Crown. So Ramsey was already pretty big in the churches. So they had done it. And I actually did a program at my high school. My high school offered financial peace and they had us go through that. So that's where I started in Texas. And then when I was in the Army, they have a military edition. So I went through it again, kind of a refresher. But yeah, so that's kind of where I've got started. You know, for me, you really have to believe in what you're doing. And, you know, my faith is a big part of who I am. And Dave talks a lot about, you know, he quotes the verse from the Bible a lot about the borrower's slave to the lender. And there is a lot of freedom, like Lyndon was talking about, in not having that burden of debt. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can go about your financial plan. But for me, like, I can really get behind not having that burden of debt. And so that's kind of how I came up and kind of my experience with it.
Nice. Yeah. And I went through the Financial Peace program myself. I don't know if it was a decade ago or about that. And then helped lead a Financial Peace University class. So let's talk about Financial Peace University, Dave Ramsey program, and planning. And I guess I'll just toss this question out to whoever wants to jump in first. What is it that you see as most impactful by starting with baby steps in the Dave Ramsey programs?
Well, I'll start out. I think one of the most impactful, or the best thing about the baby steps, is the focus part. I would often tell people in a class that I led that the important part was focus. If I leave the lights on in a room and you'll be distracted by things around the room, but if I turn off all the lights and use a laser and put a point on the wall, everybody's focus will be just on that point, nothing else. So that's what the baby steps are about, especially the first three. You only focus on one thing. You don't think about anything else. You start by saving $1,000. Easy for some people. For some others, feels nearly impossible because they've never had any savings. Mm-hmm. They're paycheck to paycheck. It's gone before. And then you move on to paying off all your debt except your home, and then save a larger emergency fund. And so the baby steps aren't about having a baby, and the baby emergency fund isn't about having a baby. It's about just taking small steps to get to where you eventually want to be.
How do you see the success of accomplishing those steps affect their forward progress?
If I can get people to focus on one step at a time, they won't, and they don't get discouraged because of that, then they can move on. It's really more about behavior. It's not about math. Mm-hmm. If it was about math, we would do it differently.
Absolutely about behavior. And really just the the whole component of that is, one, having the little wins all the way along the process. And that way, two, when you do have the setback, because, you know, Murphy will show up, or, you know, life does happen. And so, you know, from that standpoint, then you can just refocus and step back into it and move forward.
Yeah, I've had some people with tremendous success. They message me or text me whenever they pay off another debt, get another one paid off. And it's fun to share the excitement with them. And I've seen people pay off $100,000, $200,000 in debt that never thought they'd get to where they are today.
Wow. Yeah, that's so incredible. And there are points where, when you look at it from the purely math perspective, the Dave Ramsey program doesn't make sense. But what also doesn't make sense logically, at face values, is how our emotions and how our behaviors work. Because even the Bible says, like, you do the things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
And that is reality when it comes to how we handle money. It's so hard to change behavior because we have momentum in what we do to keep doing the things we're doing. Our brains like routine. We like routine. We like the dopamine hits we get when we spend money. Mm-hmm. We like the reward system created when we say, hey, I want to do that, and we do it. But then we dig ourselves this hole in our finances to where we really do kind of narrow down what our options were, what they are, both in the short term and in the long term. So the math side doesn't really matter when your behavior is not within your control. You've trained yourself to do something entirely different than what you know you want to do. Because if you're doing what you wanted to do, you'd have all kinds of money. Most people would. But our brains have been wired not to do that. So yeah, and it makes sense that it is multiple steps. So let's see. What maybe is a great example, or can you tell a story with, you know, change the names or whatever, of a success story that you guys have seen with the Dave Ramsey program and how it's resulted in financial success?
I guess maybe going back to this one's a little easier to remember because it's a little bit more recent. But this particular person, and this is often the case, had a lot of medical debt. Medical debt is, it's not your fault. It's not like you went out and spent money on things you didn't need. And the people with it tend to be a little bit discouraged because of that. And maybe feel like they're never going to get out of debt. And maybe they should just file for bankruptcy and move on. And often they get that advice from people. But there's something about being able to pay off what you owe that is it really, really makes you feel better about yourself, build your self-esteem. And that's what has happened with her. She had some pretty serious health issues, and now she's getting that paid off. And she did have some other debt too that was a result of not being able to work and just other things that I won't get into, but that really made her life difficult. But she's been just doing all kinds of things to get that debt paid off. I've been super impressed.
I have an example of an individual that an ex-spouse saddled with a lot of payday loans and other credit card expenses, and was able to kind of process through that and, you know, has come out on the backside of that whole situation in a very solid position. You know, doesn't have a whole bunch, but is still able to lead a good life in retirement with that. So.
Yeah. And the theme between those two, especially the first one, where you're under such a crushing level of debt that maybe you didn't decide to go out and spend however many thousands of dollars it wound up being, just flippantly, you know, it happened and it feels like something out of your control, but her self-esteem built back up as she pursued paying it back instead of declaring bankruptcy. The reality is 50% of bankruptcies in the US are due to medical debt. And that is a common cause, if not the final nail in the coffin that does it, where people just go so far beyond what they believe they can even begin to pay back. And they give up hope and they say, well, I guess there's this function called bankruptcy court. And I'll just, you know, we're just going to start with a clean slate. And, but what I do hear you saying is that even with that, we may be putting, there's a potential trade-off of putting ourselves in a position where we believe that we weren't able to do it, or that the money wasn't there, or that we didn't have the resource to pay it back. And we had to, you know, I guess I can use some different judgment words there, but I'm not going, like, I don't want to, because I know that some people invariably listening probably did have to declare bankruptcy at some point, for whatever reason. So I'm not trying to pass judgment on that. It's just that, you know, it seemed insurmountable, but she was working on the baby steps. She put one step in front of the other and she moved, like, she really built up her own self-esteem around finances, which in a lot of areas, when it goes down to, like, you know, whether it's a relational hardship, financial hardship, emotional hardship, or even you think about, you get an injury and it hurts to work it. It hurts to work out. Physical therapy isn't easy, but you work that muscle, you take the baby steps, you do the work, and then eventually you overcome it. And then you appreciate more where you were than when you started, because it's easy to take things for granted when everything's going right, great and right. But without going through the steps, it's hard to appreciate where you are blessed and how you are blessed, and also what it represents to be there, to be grateful.
One thing that, I mean, it's great, and it has been great helping people that are deep in debt, and one thing that I like even better is helping young people before they get in debt or before they get overwhelmingly in debt to go through it. And I've led some 20 somethings through it. And so I was curious with James, how old were you when you went through it the first time?
I was like 17 or 18.
Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah. I mean,
and your parents had gone through it. So you also had some role models.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say, you know, as an example, just kind of echo what you said, Lyndon, is, you know, I've been fortunate to have been able to go through it early. The reality is, like, maybe aside from medical debt, most people build their debt in their 20s and 30s, right? It's just like gaining or losing weight. You don't gain 100 pounds in one day. You don't lose 100 pounds in one day. It's the same with debt. And so, you know, when you're young is when you're really starting to build it. And it's just like any habit. You know, we all have our vices, but having gone through it early, having good mentorship like my parents, you know, it's definitely helped me be a lot more successful. You know, a lot of people my age can't imagine paying for a car with cash or any kind of thing like that, right? You know, people finance sofas. I don't know, right? And, you know, again, it's not like to beat anyone down, like, hey, I financed a sofa. It's not like you're a terrible person, but the freedom you have when you're able to just say, hey, I'll just save up for that. You know, that's something I can save up for. And it's just helped me, like, with my wife's college debt, the cars that we have, being able to pay for those things and not have to, you know, take a loan out for them. It's set us up for success in ways that, like, I would have made a lot of mistakes I know I would have if I didn't have the mentorship and the guidance early on. So I think a success story, to your point, Lyndon, is it's not just about getting people out of debt. It's also helping them set good habits early so you don't have to get into debt. So definitely a success.
Back when I was in college, I was a bit of a nerd, I guess, but obviously I was. I was an engineering major, but I read a book on that was written by a local person, and his name's George Fouché, and he was kind of a pioneer in seeing what the Bible said about managing your finances. And in the book, he said you shouldn't borrow money for a car. And I was like, well, how do you buy one then? And I was just like, how's that even possible? But that was really when, if I want to go back even farther in time, when I really started thinking, well, maybe there's kind of a different way to do things. And of course, that didn't keep me from borrowing money to buy a car or other things, but I had to make a few mistakes along the way. But by the time I was 30, my wife and I decided we would never borrow any more money. So. Other outside of a house anyway, that seems to still be an okay place to borrow money. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with borrowing for a vehicle at times. And you know, if you've done that, there's sometimes a good reason for that. But we found it to be very rewarding to only buy the car that we could afford and be saving up for the next one. But I passed that along to my kids, and they're really good at it. I mean, they've got a much better start than I had. So it'll be interesting to see where they go, but I don't want to share too much about them, I guess, but at least they listen. But
just in case.
Just in case, yeah.
Well, you know, now you can make the be like, hey, you know, yeah, we mentioned I talked you. About you yeah. on the podcast. Yeah. They'll be like, which one's like, I don't know, go figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I should listen.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess one of the positives I see of the whole Dave Ramsey program, all the systems, is that positive I love your illustration of the laser focus of a laser dot on the wall. That monopolizes the focus. I mean, you got guys who use it in combat for their rifles or pistols or whatever, to focus on one point. You got, and I guess, I don't know, maybe it is a little different. I mean, we used to run the cat around the house with a laser pointer.
Yeah.
You guys ever do that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we're not too different, maybe a little bit, but I'm not too different probably, but it's so helpful though, to have that level of focus and have that focused attention, purpose, goal setting, so that you get there and then you're on to the next thing. You got a path to run on. And then before you know it, you don't have debt. You guys are celebrating that, you guys got to celebrate that. You got to experience that. And then also you reach a point in life where you're like, hey, we have all this freedom, and what are we going to do? We want to be generous. You know, we're blessed, and we want to share that because we realize that in the discipline that we built in financial self-control, we realize, hey, it's not the stuff that makes you happy. Like, freedom allows a level of thanksgiving and happiness to come through that is not found in material possessions. Now, you know, a nice deck with a TV so you can watch the Chiefs. Hey, you know, that's, trust me, I'm all in. But that's not the requirement to be happy. I know most people listening will not believe that, but it's not. It's not the requirement to be happy, even though you have a great deck now.
Right.
Well, and based on the whole laser focus component, as you've built that financial muscle, then whether, you know, you're in good times or whether you're in, you know, choppy times as you're trying to invest, then, you know, you've built that pattern to be able to just continue kind of moving forward and reaching towards, whether that's, you know, baby step 4, 5, 6, you know, wherever you're at. So you know, and you get, yeah, no matter what's happening with the sea, you kind of just able to keep going down the course.
So maybe just a little test for James. What are the other four baby steps? We talked about the first three, but.
Oh man, you're going to put me on the spot here.
Yeah. 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 You've been through it twice. I'm sure okay, Jacob. So, can, yeah. Yeah.
So so the first three, and then when you get to step four is when you want to start saving. So the goal is to get to step 15% in savings.
Right. Yep.
Step five is college fund.
You got it.
So yep. You got kids hoping to save for their college fund. And then I know this might sound a little crazy, but you know, we talk about, you know, it seems like having a mortgage might be the only safe debt or a good debt. I don't know, but maybe pay it off early. So number six yeah. is trying to pay your mortgage off early. You really save a lot of money long-term. That's a huge expense in interest. So, and then the last one, just building wealth and giving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
Got it.
Live like no one else. So you can live like no one else.
Yep. Yeah. And I might add to that, or maybe ask, why do you, why save for retirement before your kids, you know? Don't you love your kids? Don't you want to help them out with their college before you save for yourself?
Well, I mean, you know, there are a couple different schools of thought on this. I was fortunate that the U.S. Army paid for my college. So, you know, I had two brothers the same. So I think that was like, I don't know if I'd say that was my parents' college plan, but it worked out for them. But, you know, it's kind of like the concept of, what's that, Mike?
Where'd they send you?
They sent me to the Army's college.
That would be.
And that's called?
West Point.
Okay. West Point.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's why you can remember you went to West Point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of like, you know, when you're on an airplane and they tell you to put your mask on before you put someone else's mask on.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, you know, you can't help others if you're drowning.
Right.
And I mean, obviously college is, it's different and it's continually evolving. So it's definitely a different challenge nowadays than maybe it was even 20, 30 years ago. But, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities, to plan for college. And so, you know, you gotta, I guess, kind of back to that analogy of you're drowning, you're not really going to be able to help anyone else. So, saving that 15% for yourself first is helping you secure their future as well.
Yeah. So they don't have to come back around and bail you out in retirement.
Yeah. And what kids are going to do that, right? I'm going to, yeah.
Right. Right. Hey, remember how I helped you out with college? Yeah. I was wondering if you could help.
Yeah.
You know, if you could help pay that back a little.
Yeah.
Cover the long-term care costs now. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to saddle you with the worst written trust you can imagine.
Yeah.
You're going to have to administer it. Just kidding. There wouldn't be much left if that were the case.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. What does Dave Ramsey say about estate planning and trust or will?
Really just that everyone needs it.
Everybody
even when
needs
you don't
one.
Realize yeah. that you have, you know, assets, you need to have a will. And, you know, even a simple thing as your car, you know, if it's not titled correctly or included within a will, then it's, you know, it has to go through court process.
Yep.
Yeah. He does talk quite a bit about it, especially if you have kids. You've got to have a will and
absolutely and a direction where they're going to go.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It is one of the first things I ask people or as part of the opening meeting, do you have a will? I'm meeting with parents, with kids at least.
Yeah. I don't know if this is like an episode where we just spotlight all our other episodes, because we've already highlighted like four others, but we just last week's episode was specifically about this. And it goes into a lot of detail when Mike was interviewing Tim O'Sullivan. And I mean, there can be a lot of problems that you don't think of, or you think it's not going to be a problem. Yeah. Until you don't have a will or an estate plan. So it's better not to create those problems by having a plan.
Estate planning is very key, especially once you build up the wealth. How do you know what's a good test for someone to cognitively think of, like, okay, do I need financial coaching? Do I need financial planning? Do I need what level of financial help do I need if I'm trying to go through this Dave Ramsey process, or I'm whether I'm starting there, ending there, you know, how does somebody figure out which level of help they should have?
Well, really the biggest thing on that is if you're in baby step 1, 2, 3 and trying to navigate through, everyone's telling you, oh, just go file bankruptcy, but you know, there is hope and opportunity going forward, then having a coach can kind of help lead that through. Financial planning comes great when you're stepping future into, you know, 4 through 7 and looking at what tax, you know, if there's any tax issues or there's other things to be, you know, included within the financial things that you're having to think through. And that's a great time that financial planning comes into play. So, and makes a lot of sense for you.
I guess, and I guess my own sense would be on that is if you need somebody to come really alongside you to help you focus your energy in a certain direction long enough to where you get to where you've got a surplus of resources to begin applying and making more executive function decisions, where you're looking at things saying, hey, here's our alternatives. We have this momentum going in this direction. And amongst these alternatives, what is the best, wisest, highest use of the money? Versus the I guess the motivation, the perseverance, the rewiring of your brain in really establishing the new habits and the new normal for how you live.
Yeah, I've had worked with people before that, you know, they've heard they need to save for college for their kids, they need to save for retirement, they need an emergency fund. Meanwhile, they don't have money for anything and they're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the focus aspect where, okay, forget about everything right now, but saving up for saving that emergency fund. Mm-hmm. They come in with no savings or maybe some in a 401k that's come out of their paycheck at work, but no emergency fund. And they're one emergency away from bankruptcy, basically, at that point. And even if they have a couple thousand in their 401k, they took that out, it wouldn't amount to too much after the penalty, so on. And getting them refocused, forgetting about everything else, because they're just hearing things everywhere. And get them through those first three steps, and then they can get back on the saving for 15% toward retirement, saving for their kids. They have extra, eventually maybe paying off their house early if they can. Then we can do a financial plan for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You got something to work with. They have an awareness, they have muscle memory. They've built, they're not the wimpy kid going in, loading up the bench press with all the plates and you're just watching.
Yeah, even with the financial peace scores, I sometimes wonder, I look over the class at the beginning, I'm like, some of these people, when we get past the first 3 weeks, it might not be good for them to even hear the rest of it. because they are so buried in debt, and
that's a good point.
They can't make it from one paycheck to the next. And, you know, talk about some things in the future, like being able to save for retirement. They don't even need to hear about that right now.
It's depressing. If you don't even have a vision where you can get there, it's depressing.
Yeah, it looks impossible.
Yeah.
And I've had people drop out because of that.
Well, and for some people, I mean, that is true, but for so many of them, whether they've seen it there or not, at least that seed of hope has been planted that there is life and there is something to strive for outside of whatever challenge or junk that they're going through in the current time. So it's, you know, yeah, that's true for some, but, you know, in some other cases, you know, being able to kind of see a bigger picture and given some hope is, you know, works for them as well. So it depends on the situation.
It does. I've just had a few of them that they just could never see the hope. Mm-hmm. And I really had to work with them to keep them focused on whichever step they were on.
Right.
Well, and maybe just as a function of their financial situation and their lack of feeling of control over their life circumstances, maybe they were depressed to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to how we can help redirect people towards the right people as well. But yeah. Mental health and finances are really connected. Because it's so behaviorally connected and
One person, seriously, I told her, you need to quit seeing me and you need to go see a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she ever did or not, but until, and you know, if you're listening and that's you, it may be that you need a counselor more than a financial coach right now. And I'd encourage you to seek one out.
A good recommended one. Yeah. Seek one out. It's really hard to catch a vision for the future when you feel like every day you're living in fog. I've encouraged more than one client to go either see a marital counselor or relationship or just go see someone for them, because it, going back to living the best life possible with the time we have left, I mean, it can be hard when our brains get put under more stress and pressure than they were ever meant to go through, especially on their own. And culturally, it's easy to isolate and you know, not hook up with other people so that our brains can do more together. Something that I don't know if we've really talked about on the podcast, but Dr. Kurt Thompson came in for the apprentice gathering that's hosted here in Wichita at Friends University. Stephanie and I had the pleasure of hosting. It was her hosting. And I was the chauffeur, basically, to them hosting. And that was great. That was so much fun. He's written a few books. He is huge in that space. But one of the things that he really hammered on is like, hey, our brains are not meant to do hard work for very long by themselves. In fact, they just can't. They're not wired for it. And hard work being forming new connections, new habits, changing the way we do things. But our brains can do really hard work for a long period of time if they're doing it together. And so that's where the value of a coach, a community, togetherness comes into play when you are working alongside somebody else. And also even potentially a clinical therapist who understands the changes that you want to make in your mind and in your habits and in your state of being and how to help you get there in a functional way, rather than just willpower, because oftentimes willpower, especially by yourself, will never be enough to get where you actually want to be.
Yeah.
So I do love how Dave Ramsey, and I know we talked about, you know, not being negative, but I used to be more negative on it because I was so focused on the math side and I was so inept on the emotional side at the time. So I really discounted how much all this works together, but now I do see, and I'm far more thankful than I've ever been on how his program integrates the two in a very practical and accessible way for millions. I don't know, probably not a billion yet, but like millions of people literally have been impacted positively by this.
Right. Yeah. I think that goes toward, you know, talking about baby step four, saving 15%. And where's that number come from? Well, if you save 15% of your household income, you'll have enough for retirement. That's where it comes from.
Sure.
You can do 10 if you want, and maybe that'll be enough for you too. But 15% will be enough. And that's something you can control. You can't control what the market's going to do, your investments are going to do. And we can't either, as good as we are here. But
I thought you could.
No, I can't.
You
no,
can't?
No.
Oh, man.
All we can do is control how diversified your portfolio is. But 15%, it always comes out okay, even if you retire like right now when the market's down 30% or whatever it is right now. It works.
Is that because you have a crystal ball in your office?
I do. It doesn't work though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It quit working, I think, in 2008, somewhere around then.
But you just got it like a couple years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Huh. Well, whatever. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't working then and then you bought it.
Right.
Because then it was more affordable.
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense. Very good. All right, let's go around and, I guess I'm going to start with James, down in hurricane land. So glad you survived, my friend. And you've not survived, but thrived in the last couple of days and got power back on internet and everything.
Internet.
So we're grateful that this podcast has been possible to have you on it. Anyways, so James, what is living the best life possible for you? What does that look like with the time you have left?
I mean, I think this episode is relevant. I think for me, not living under the burden of debt is big. It gives you a lot of flexibility and freedom when you don't have all your money earmarked, you know, your paychecks earmarked for something before you even get paid. But more than just financial, I think living the best life possible is just living our purpose. And we all have a different purpose, but, you know, being able to, for me, that's, you know, like my gifts, my strength is to connect to people, build relationships. And we all need it. Like you said, Mike, being on an island is tough. I've tried, it doesn't work. And so to me, having the financial freedom to be able to build relationships and connect people and build them up and encourage them is living the best life possible.
So you're not on an island, but you are on a peninsula.
I am. I am on a peninsula.
Just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah. Still connected. So
good. You are still connected. You're still connected. All right. That's our takeaway here. Jacob, what is living the best life possible the time you have left for you?
For me, really, it's just been the ability to connect and to journey alongside with people and see them kind of reach their purpose and what their hopes and desires are. So for me, when I'm able to journey and celebrate, you know, a win that they've had, it's always a great day for me.
Lennon, how about yourself?
Well, mathematically, I have less time left than the rest of you.
So it's more condensed or what?
I don't know. I mean, none of us know how long we have left on this earth, but I'm more mature than the rest of you. I'm older than the rest of you anyway. And living the best, I guess you said living the best life possible with the time you have left.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that more lately. Not only the time I have left, but the time I have left that I can still, I guess, do the things that I enjoy doing right now. And also preparing for that time when I won't be able to do some of the things I enjoy doing now. And hopefully I'll have some new things then I can do when I, maybe this is partly watching parents as they grow older and realizing what's coming. So I think our, Julie and I, our goal over the next 10 to 20 years is to be able to do a lot of things together. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, not just vacationing, but that's a big part of it. We hope to do a lot of that. And she's retired, so now we have a lot more flexibility. I found my new career in financial planning. It's not quite as new now, about 4 years now.
Well, you're still in your first decade.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It does give me a lot of flexibility with my time. And that's part of, and I'm glad I'm doing this. I can do this for a long time yet, but we'll still be able to do things outside of work and enjoy doing those together. While I do enjoy this work a lot also, and meeting with people, helping them out, both on the coaching side, investment advisory and planning side also. And Julie and I do have plans to hopefully give a lot of our money away also over the rest of our lifetime. And maybe just to put a little plug in for financial planning also, we've discovered through that we can do more than we thought we could do. We can give more than we thought we could do. And we can enjoy doing some things that we didn't think we would ever be able to do. And I think without financial planning, you're not quite sure, and you're a little hesitant to maybe do some things, including spending money on yourself or spending money on others, family, through ministries we support and so on. So I think that's just kind of a long-winded way of saying that's what I want to do with the rest of my life.
I appreciate your plug on financial planning because this is coming from a rehabilitated engineer who excelled at money. They use Excel to do everything with money.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, I missed that. Yeah, we do like Excel.
Yeah, you do.
You may have thought it was a financial tool, but it's actually an engineering tool.
It is an engineering tool.
It's all we used.
It's not financial planning software. No. I don't care how good you are at programming with it. It's not the same thing.
It's a math tool.
It's a math tool. Anyways, I just want to speak to that because with your successful career in engineering, being a software and electrical engineer, it's been so fun to see you kind of shift over to financial planning and the important and recognize and really get into the importance of that from as an engineer, because there's a lot of folks out there who are really smart that they don't realize the nuances and the complexities that come up when you're dealing with financial planning and how investments, different tax treatments and all the schedules and how quickly that changes and shifts around when you employ different tactics to make the money go further and be more efficient, and for you and Julie to do more with your money, make it go further charitably, go further, period. A lot of folks just don't realize what's possible when you really apply good financial planning to create a vision for the future, and not just a vision, but really help create an abundance from where you started, without even getting into picking the right stocks, so to speak. It so much can be done without taking on additional risk. And I think that gets lost quickly in short ad snippets and commercials and feel goody things you see on TV, because it's hard to experience until you actually just get in the office and sit down and work with somebody on your own finances. Mm-hmm.
I think the important part, or the big change for me, became when I looked at it through the lens of life and instead of the lens of money. Mm-hmm. The lens of money, it's like, how much can I have?
Yep.
Before I die. Mm-hmm. And the lens of life is how much life can I have between now and the day I die?
Absolutely. Yep. We'll have to do another group installment of that. I guess for me, I'll kind of wind it down on what it means for me. I'm realizing, just how precious these years are with my kids. They're 11, 9, and almost 7, and they all, between the three of them, it's hard to keep up with how fast they're changing and growing. And they're really gaining a lot of steam, and it's like, it's hard enough to keep up with one, let alone three. And, but it's just been a really, really awesome stage of life that they can begin to connect with, you know, different life lessons and discussing, helping them understand relationships, the world around them, godly perspective. And it's been such a wonderful stage of life to invest in this stage and help get them set up in a healthy way for the rest of their years. So that's been a joy. And then also, just to team up with you guys and figure out how we can do this better. How can we, create better experiences and engaging conversations with our clients? How can we better serve all that and just learn how to reinvent this industry from the inside out? So thank you guys. With that, I will wind this season 2 installment down on Leading Edge Financial Planning, talking heads, talking about Ramsey and how it connects to our firm and how we're happy to implement Dave Ramsey like services. I would say like, because we're giving individualized advice, not from a radio perspective, so to speak. This is a podcast, so it's kind of in the middle, kind of like radio. Anyways, that'll do it for today with Real Wealth Podcast, sponsored by Leading Edge Financial Planning. Have a great day.